Ant-Man. It's time for Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan. I'm pointing at you so you can start talking.
That was actually a very cute intro. Thank you. Thank you for that. And this is a very special episode for a number of reasons. Number one, this is the end of phase two. So we have finished two phases after this episode. So that's pretty impressive. We still have a lot more.
It took us
right. And but we also have a lot of movies still to go. So this is, I think, like, it's not quite the halfway point in terms of the amount of movies, but it's pretty close.
If I remember right, phase one was like 7 movies and phase two was 6. And I think phase three was like 13 movies, 12 movies, whatever it is that got us to 23. Because it was 23 movies combined for the first three phases.
Well,
it probably, hold on. It was Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2.
All right, well, while you do that, because that'll take you a while to count, we're just going to get into this. So we're talking about Ant-Man. Now, Ant-Man had been one of those films that was also conceived for very early on. There was talks going back to, all the way to the first Avengers. And I guess there was a plan at one point to actually include Ant-Man, Hank Pym in the original Avengers movie. But Edgar Wright, who was involved with the project, he was going to write and direct the film. He didn't want the characters to be introduced before the film. So he reached a deal, and that is what happened. Now, Edgar Wright eventually actually leaves the project because of Marvel's mean to me and doesn't let me do what I want. They call it creative differences. And this is not meant to offend Edgar Wright, who will never hear this podcast.
He did go on to make Baby Driver, so.
Which was like a movie.
That was a great movie. Let's also be honest. Edgar Wright is also the man behind Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's
None
End.
Of these movies I've seen.
Oh, you need to at least, okay. The World's End, you can skip, even though that's the end of the Edgar Wright Universe trilogy. But you definitely got to see Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. You've got to at least see those two.
Hard pass. It's not my kind of humor. It's not my kind of film. But anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is that there seems to be, and I think we saw this last week when we talked about Age of Ultron, where a director has his own version of what this movie is going to be. But this is not the director's film. This is the Marvel's film. So Edgar Wright wanted a completely standalone film. But if this movie was completely standalone, you run into another issue. Somebody would have pointed out, okay, well, why did they call the Avengers? Why isn't this S.H.I.E.L.D. Facility that they need to infiltrate have security? Or, you know, why didn't Steve or Tony or the Avengers go through it? And it adds plot holes. I can understand trying to make the movie more standalone. I think this movie's still very standalone. I think all of the origin films do a very good job of being standalone enough that you can watch them by themselves, but also are still part of that universe, and you see those elements. So obviously with some movies, we see more of this than with others, especially as we get deeper into the MCU. However, I will say this, that this to me felt very much like a standalone film. Like, it wasn't necessary. Like, it's really, really not necessary to have seen any of the other films to understand what happens in Ant-Man.
Yeah, and not only that, but the other thing is that, well, not only that, but, like, in Ant-Man, like, they do pot shots anyways at things. You know, like, you know, you have a moment where Hank Pym mentions, like, dropping buildings or dropping cities and stuff like that. So it's like,
yes.
So you don't need to actually.
That was a jab at Stark.
Yeah, that was like a jab at Stark. And then like they made the joke of it, like, oh, well, why don't you just call Captain America to do this? And so it's like.
It's
a standalone film. I mean, at the end of the day, and I still view it as such, it's a standalone film. that is just happens
it is
to
a
be
standalone film.
That just happens to be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And it does lay the groundwork for what we'll see next time when we cover Civil War, of terms of like how Sam knows about Scott. But the funny thing is this, when they started doing rewrites and they were reworking the vision and the script, the writers or the creators, director, whoever it was, they actually went to see Captain America the Winter Soldier and they like fell in love with Sam, which makes perfect sense. And they asked if Marvel, if they could do a little thing with Sam in the film. And Feige said, oh, this is a brilliant idea. Yes, please do that. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah. Let's start at the beginning in the 1960s. No, just kidding. We're not going to start with Tales to Astonish, but we'll get to that. We are actually going to start with the Triskelion being built in 1989. And we see a meeting of the minds. We see Peggy Carter. We see Tony Stark, played by the same actor from Iron Man 2.
No, it was Howard Stark.
And
you said Tony Stark. It was Howard Stark.
Yes, Howard Stark. Sorry. Basically, anyway, same guy, less daddy issues. So Howard is there. Peggy's there. And this other guy, his name is Mitchell Carson, who's not named yet. He's a dick. Well, but we'll get to that. So we see that there's a meeting. A man enters, and he's speaking to Stark. His name is Hank Pym. We see Peggy's there. She's much older because this is the 80s, but apparently she lives to be like 100. So he is Dr. Pym, and he is the inventor of this thing called the Pym particle, which is like this little thingy with the red liquid. But Pym doesn't want anyone else to have it, and he's angry because Howard is trying to build his own version. And Howard's like, this is the greatest thing in the world since Captain America. Why are you hiding this? And to be honest, I kind of understand where Pym's coming from, because later on we find out that the Ant-Man suit and the Pym particle is actually very powerful. And in the wrong hands, just similarly to the Super Soldier Serum, it's not a good idea for bad guys to have that sort of thing.
Yep.
And his distrust of Howard, who makes weapons, is not unfounded, in my opinion. But there's this third guy. He says he doesn't want anyone. So Pym says he doesn't want anyone else to have this Pym particle. And the third guy says, well, if only you protected Janet with such ferocity, Dr. Pym. And then he like shoves him down and his nose starts bleeding. Cause that's a,
no, no. He threw a straight right jab.
Was it right hook?
It was okay, a right hook.
So he
hook.
Punches him in the face.
And I love Howard's response right, so to that. Gets- I love Howard's response to that because Howard is like, hey man, don't look at me. You know, you brought it up, not me, you know?
Yeah. So there's also an interesting scene where, so Hank leaves. He's like, I quit S.H.I.E.L.D. Fudge you. I'm leaving. And Peggy's like, yeah, you guys are morons. And Mitchell's like, we should go after him and take the Pym particle, blah, blah, blah. And Howard's like, no, we shouldn't. Like, that's a really dumb idea. Like, we're not going to fight a war with Hank. Like, that's stupid. What is wrong with you? We know what's wrong with him. We'll get to that. So we flash to the present, and we flash to totally not a present riot, even though it kind of looks like that. There's, like, this little... Basically, we meet Scott Lang, who is getting out of prison. The whole exchange is not relevant other than to establish kind of the lighter feel for this film, which is that it's going to be very comedic. So Scott is picked up by his friend Luis, who I guess they were cellmates, and Scott is gonna stay with him, I guess, and get his life back together because he really wants to be with his daughter. And so he gets a job at Baskin Robbins, and this is like the most, like, you can see the pain of the people that have ever worked in the fast food industry going, oh, this is our life. So he's at Baskin Robbins. But the funny thing is before he says that, before we see that scene, he says, oh, I have a master's degree in electrical engineering. I'll be fine. Like, you don't need to worry about me getting a job just because I'm an ex-con. So he gets a job at Baskin Robbins. And this guy's at the counter. And he's like, oh, I'll just have like a burger. It's like, it's Baskin Robbins, it's ice cream. But this entire exchange is hysterical. but it just continues to establish the feel for the film. And it's kind of, I like the pretty colors of Baskin Robbins are very contrast to the like heist elements of the film, which is really fun. So there's also this really fun thing that I don't know where it came from, but there's this concept that like Baskin Robbins always finds out, like they found out about Scott Lang's like criminal record and whatnot. And he's like, oh dude, you're a badass. You're like, he's very much established as like a Robin Hood. He corrected a wrong. He was like a whistleblower that went too far, essentially. Instead of just blowing the whistle, he went back and hacked the system and like cleared them all out. And so he's
but like, still oh, proceeds dude, to so get cool. fired.
Still proceeds to get fired. And I'm just like, that's okay. Is that like,
well, I mean, technically, I mean, he lied about it, so rightfully the employer can fire them for lying on the resume and stuff like that.
Fine. but there's this like notion that like Baskin Robbins always finds out. That's really funny because he comes
one.
So unfortunately Scott does get fired, and when he comes back home and Louise is like, oh yeah, Baskin Robbins always finds out. Like, what is with that? It's just like such a funny, dorky thing to have in this film, and like it's memorable. But anyway, Louise is not that. But Louise tells him that like, okay, like life sucks, it's not bad. But like, here's some friends of mine, and we have this little perfect job. But before that, we see that Hank we meet older Hank, and it should be noted that Michael Douglas plays Hank Pym, and they did a really good job of CGI-ing him in the 1989 version that he looks like his younger self. Like, they did a great job. But anyway, so Hank goes back to visit his own company, and we meet Hope Van Dyne, who hates her dad.
For Hooray. Reasons. Hooray, daddy issues.
Who doesn't have daddy issues in at this point? Like, anyway, Cassie Lang. Cassie Lang does not have daddy issues. She has... In the comic, she has mommy issues. But we'll get to that. So Hank visits his company. We meet this guy named Derek Cross, who invited him for the special occasion. And we see the guy from the flashback. The dick. So Darren presents basically a version of the Pym particle. And he makes a reference to Tales to Astonish, which was really funny. Because, any guesses?
I
Ant-Man debuted in Tales to Astonish, I think it's like number 27, way back in days of old.
Back a millennia ago.
Pretty much. So we see that he's developed a suit called the Yellow Jacket, and he's basically Howard Starking it. Like, this is a weapon for war, but unlike Howard Stark, Cross is willing to sell it to the highest bidder.
Because it's all about Hank, that bling bling, man. That's all it's all about.
So Hank tries to warn Darren about the dangers of the Pym particle, but he doesn't really listen. Hope and Hank, there's like this kind of underlying tension with Hope and Hank, but there's also like something else going on. So she wants the suit, and she's like, just give me the suit, and I'll do this. Meanwhile, so Hank won't let her. He says he found a guy. So he flashed to Scott, who goes to see his cute little daughter, Cassie, who's played by one of the most adorable and amazing kid actresses I've seen in a very long time. She's amazing. I wish her nothing but a great and wonderful career. Cassie is his daughter with Maggie, or Margaret, and we also meet Cassie's future stepdad, Paxton. Cassie is really happy to see her dad, and Scott got her this like really creepy looking bunny, but he has like I think he probably made it because it's like this creepy looking bunny, but when you press him, he says, I love you, or something like that. It's just such a fun contrast. I love it.
It's the greatest thing that nightmares are made of.
Exactly. So Cassie comes in, she's like, Mommy's so excited to see you. She choked on her drink because it's Cassie's birthday party. And so this is very interesting because we're going to go to the comics. The comics! In the comics, Cassie's mom is not the easiest person to love. Her name is Peggy in the comics, but I think they probably didn't want two Peggies running around. In the MCU. So Peggy.
Oh, come on. In the DCEU, you can have as many Marthas as possible. We can have many Peggies.
No. Anyway, but what's interesting here is that they changed not only Peggy's personality completely when it came to Maggie and being a mom, they also changed her stepdad entirely. The only thing her movie stepdad, Cassie's movie stepdad, and comic book stepdad have in common is they're both policemen. Except Cassie's stepdad in the comics is a uniform cop, and Paxton is like a detective. I love Paxton because in the comics, Cassie's stepdad is kind of a jerk. And he loves nothing more than to bash Cassie's dad. And so in the comics, Scott becomes Ant-Man because Cassie has a heart condition and needs a life-saving heart transplant or surgery or whatever. And they kind of hinted this in the film because at the end of the day, Scott is still becoming Ant-Man because of Cassie. So after this little interaction with Scott and Cassie, Paxton's like, dude, you can't be here. And Scott wants to be a part of Cassie's life. And Maggie is not insensitive, but also kind of cold, which is kind of understandable when your ex, whatever he was, is, you know, was in prison. She tells him that if you want to be a part of Cassie's life, you need to get an apartment, get a job, and then they, or pay child support. And then they can talk about visitation, which we don't know. The frustrating part is, like, we don't really know the backstory of, like, how long was Scott in prison for? How old was Cassie? Because Cassie seems to recognize, know, and love her dad. But so it's a little bit unclear. Part of me kind of wishes they had gotten an actress that was just, like, a smidge older, like, instead of six, like, maybe 8 or 9. But like I said, I love Cassie's actress so much. I can't even. She's so cute. Also worthy of note, and I need to preface this now because it'll come up when we do Ant-Man and Wasp, Cassie Lang becomes her own wonderful size-changing superhero and becomes part of the Young Avengers, which will eventually hopefully be a Disney Plus series, and takes on the codename Stature when in the comics when Scott, after Scott dies. I'm happy. This is my first Young Avenger in the MCU. And for those that know me, Young Avengers is the greatest comic ever. It is one my favorite comic ever. Alan Heinberg is a genius. I really want to meet him one day and just thank him for this magic because it's magical.
But we're didn't he like something of yours on Twitter recently?
Heinberg? I don't think so. I think he closed his Twitter.
Or was it on Facebook? I remember you posting something about him recently.
So that wasn't Heinberg. That was Jim Chung. And Jim Chung tends to, he likes the comments I leave on his Instagram, which is mostly me like, please bring back the original Young Avengers. What's being done to them is a travesty. Read my blog to find out more. Shameless plug for my blog, not gonna lie.
Oh, we gave you the shameless plug at the end of the episode. Save it there.
Shameless plug in the middle of the episode. So anyway, Scott goes back to Louise. He's feeling rejected. He thinks Maggie's being unreasonable, which from Scott's perspective, I can understand why. From Maggie's perspective, she feels like she's been doing this on her own. Scott wasn't there for her like he should have been. And I get it. But Cassie seems to really want to be around her dad, so it almost seems like unfair to not even allow like supervised visits. Anyway, so Scott goes to Louise. He finds out about this little perfect job that's not so perfect. Meanwhile, Darren Cross is, first of all, insane and has some serious latent daddy issues that he's projecting onto Hank. Like, I don't even know where to start with that one.
Daddy issues.
Parentage and like father figures does seem to be a recurring theme in this film. And I think it's also worth noting that, where was I going with that? I had a line before that. What did I say? Daddy issues, Darren's insane. Darren Cross is one of the few, in my opinion, truly insane villains. Like, he's a complete lunatic and it shows. Whereas, like, Loki was a calculating villain. Red Skull is just a mad scientist villain. Like, Darren Cross just comes out like a lunatic. Like, he gets more and more psychotic and, like, paranoid and insane as the film goes on, and we find out why. Because the Scott suit that he eventually gets has a helmet that helps regulate everything so that his brain patterns don't get all wonky. Cross ain't that smart. So his brain chemistry has been altered by whatever crap he's been shooting himself up with. Anyway, so he's not ready to test on live subjects, but he's doing it anyway. There's a guy that's during the initial press meeting to show the magic of the yellow jacket, which is actually a name that Hank Pym goes by later in the comics. He melts the guy basically and turns him into like this little pillow of gloop that he just like flushes down the toilet because the guy didn't like the implications of using it as a weapon. So this is like, I almost feel like that's something the Joker would have done just like to get a laugh. Like, I'm just going to shrink this guy down into a bunch of goop. That's funny.
Not only that, but it's like, you know, it's they're in the bathroom of all places to do this. And like, Darren's like, you know, I really value your opinion. And then he hits him with the thing. It's like, consider this as me taking your opinions under consideration, as he throws the napkin into the toilet and flushes him down the toilet. So it has like a little bit of poetry to it at the same time when you look at that.
What should also be noted is that Hope is kind of like his right-hand woman, and she sees this. So they're on dinner together, and he talks about how they chose their mentor poorly and how Hank is so awful. And I'm just like, wait, whose father is he again? Like, what is going on?
It's like, it's one thing for Hope to bash her father, but yo, bro, you ain't my brother. You know?
Hope at least has like a rational reason for it. But Hope says like, you know, his ego will get, he'll like deserves everything that's coming to him. So, the tip that Luis gets is like from a friend of a girl who like cleans the house for Pym. Okay. So I guess there's like a big safe and they don't know what's inside the safe, but they're still going to break in.
Because that's what I do. When I don't know what's there, fudge it. I'm just going to break in anyways.
There could be Nazi paraphernalia in there. Like, come on, you don't know. Okay. So Scott goes in. One of the guys like disables the power in the area so that the alarms don't go off. So Scott goes in, and there's like this very like steampunk looking wall, and Scott is basically like MacGyver's a fingerprint so that he can get into the room. Okay, so he gets into the room, and there's a 1910 vault door that uses the same steel they used in Titanic. So he ends up using like water and antifreeze to blow the door. And he does. And what does he find? A suit.
Well, no, at the time he's like, it's like, and some, it's, he's like, it's like some motocross stuff. That's what he referred it to as. It's like a motocross outfit. Like he's confused.
Oh, sorry. It was water and nitrogen.
Yeah.
So anyway, but there's also like something like ant-like is watching. We know that that's Hank, and Scott takes the suit. So Darren kills a baby sheep. He's still not having any luck. Oh my God. The amount of animals this man has sacrificed, animal concerning organization, animal awareness organization should go after him alone.
I mean, you could have had at least a nice meal out of the thing instead of turning it into goop, man.
Although funny enough, behind the scenes, when they filmed that, they did serve lamb at the like table for the cast. And everybody, it was like, they were like, this is the most awkward lunch ever.
Hey, is this that lamb? Is this the lamb from earlier today?
So Scott's kind of bummed because this little perfect job is not so little or perfect. And so Hank's voice that he starts hearing and then he puts on the suit, or he puts on the suit and then starts hearing the voice?
No, so he's sitting in the bathroom and he's looking at this suit and he's like really disappointed and he goes, you know what? Let's put it on. And he puts it on. And then once he puts the helmet on, that's when Hank starts talking to him. And it freaks out Scott because Scott's like, what the hell is going on here? Who's talking to me? Where is this voice coming from? And then he hits the button thing, or he hears Luis coming. and he hits the button on the hand and it shrinks him. And this is just where,
don't forget, this is also right about where Luis is about to go take a shower.
Yes.
So,
well, that was the build up to that, because he shrinks down to avoid being seen by Luis in the outfit.
So as we progress through this, the next like couple of instances, Scott just keeps falling. He's like on a record player. He like falls through like different parts of the house. He into apartments. He runs into a rat until finally he gets told by Hank to like get on the ant.
No, the ant doesn't come till much later.
Well, there's the first time and then there's a second. Well, anyway, basically, Scott freaks out and goes to return the suit. Oh, Hank says, not bad. Keep the suit. He'll be in, and then he'll be in touch. So Scott goes to return the suit and gets arrested. And Paxton lays the guilt on thick. I'm starting to think he might have had a Jewish mother. No, you're right. So the ant moment shows up later.
The ant moment shows up later.
I was like, wait a minute. So Hank comes to see Scott while he's in jail. He knows about Maggie and knows about Cassie. He says, like, you know, you're either in on this. And Hank reveals that he actually let him steal the suit. So Hank basically orchestrated this as like an audition for Scott to see if he's worthy. So Hank basically gives him options of like staying in jail or a way out, and Scott takes the way out. It's so cool how the ants like bring him the suit and they start counting down. That was really, really well done.
Yep. I enjoyed that too. That it was like really kind of putting the pressure on Scott to make a decision right then and there.
Yep. So this is where we meet the ant. This is where we see the ants more prominently, and Scott hops on an ant that is being controlled by Hank, and the ant's name is 247, and he has wings because some ants can fly. And what's so funny is, first of all, Hank is controlling the ants, but also the fact that Scott names him Antony. But because of all of the flying around and avoiding, and Paxton like driving and trying to avoid everything and getting out of the 5-block radius that they set up, Scott passes out. He wakes up and there's Hope just like staring at him. Like, if I could, I would murder you any second and feel no regrets kind of look. Hope is not the nicest to Scott for a while. And we know why. She's mad that Hank has picked Scott to go on the mission and wear the suit when she's the one that is like desperate to do it. But anyway, Scott ends up walking into the kitchen, but there's all these ants and they just like move out of the way so he can step. He's like, if you won't zap me, I won't step on you.
It's so adorable.
It really is. So Hank had his eye on Scott since Vista, which is when Scott like hacked his way and became a whistleblower / hacker. And Hank shows that he has like a little like, it looks almost like a hearing aid that lets him control the ants. He says he talks to the ants. There's some exposition, and Hank talks about how it got boomed, how booted from Pymtech, and how Hope was the deciding vote. But when she saw what Cross was planning and doing, she came back. And Hank will basically help Scott to make sure he gets to see his daughter if he helps them. And he's like, okay, great. I'll do whatever I can. I'm done being a thief and stealing things.
And it comes to the greatest line. Scott goes, so what do you want me to do?
I need you to break in and steal something. Yeah.
No. The literal line is, we're going to break in and steal some shit. I'm like, all right, Hank, let's do this. You just sold.
So the plan is to break into Pymtech and steal the yellow jacket. The next scene is actually Paxton at breakfast with Cassie and Maggie. And he's like, you're going after my daddy? And Paxton's like, well, I just want your daddy to be safe. And Cassie's reaction is like the most typical 6-year-old thing ever. She's like, I hope you don't catch him. And just like the attitude on that face. I'm just going to be gushing about Cassie this entire movie. It'll be significantly worse when we get to Ant-Man and Wasp. Cross has success finally. We finally find out that the guy from the S.H.I.E.L.D., his name is Mitchell Carson. He's former S.H.I.E.L.D. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Wink, wink. And Scott says, well, what about calling the Avengers? And Pym's like, oh, no, we're not calling the Avengers because Stark. And we didn't want Stark involved.
Well, it was like, no, his line was like, I held on to this to keep it away from one Stark. Why would I hand it over to another?
Yeah. And then there's also a jab at Stark that you talked about in the beginning of, like, you know, dropping cities. And I'm like, okay, I'm not the biggest fan of Tony Stark, but even I know that's not his fault. Exactly. Yeah.
He was
fault because he created Ultron, which led to the events, but he didn't blow up the purposefully try to blow up, you know, drop a city from the sky.
Yeah, he was trying to prevent the city from going even further to destroy the world.
Exactly. Hank doesn't want to lose hope. Because Janet Van Dyne, who is the original Wasp in the comics, yada, yada, yada. So there's a fun kind of like, it's not a full-on training montage because there's it's not like set to music exactly. It's like a montage with breaks in between. But Hope trains Hank in hand-to-hand combat. And she's like, well, show me how to punch.
And trains Scott in hand-to-hand combat, not Hank.
Yeah, this is going to keep happening. So Hope trains Scott in hand-to-hand combat. And she's like, well, show me how you punch. And he's all like, boxer. It's like, punches her arm. She's like, no, that's not a punch.
Well, he kind of does like that light punch too.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to like hurt Hope. Yep. Or he's afraid to hurt Hope if he throws a full-on punch.
Right. So he puts but in return, he's like, okay, well, show me how to punch. So he puts his hand up thinking that she's going to punch it, and she just like socks him one. We know she got her punching skills from her dad.
But the great thing is that afterwards, like Hank goes like, oh, she was trained in this when she was young, when she was going through a very difficult time.
Jiu-jitsu or Krav Maga or both, yeah. Or something.
Yeah, and then as Scott is getting up, he's going like, were you aiming for the hand? Like, let's just put this out there right now. Paul Rudd, perfect choice.
Perfecto. So then
and the guy doesn't age either, like Keanu Reeves.
He doesn't. He really doesn't.
I think both him and Keanu Reeves are vampires. I'm really convinced.
I also just saw like a picture from Clueless, and I was like, oh my God, that's Paul Rudd. Second reaction. Oh, he hasn't aged today. Anyway, so then we see like Hank is teaching Scott about all of the details of the suit, and he's like, oh, well, the regulator, and he's like, oh, don't you dare touch that. And they talk about like going subatomic. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. He says like, oh, the quantum realm, if you go subatomic, you'll just continue like shrinking down and down and down and down and never. Okay.
And you'll never return.
Yep. So Scott trains on how to get the ants to do stuff. And he learns about the different types of ants, which I thought was really fun. This is like a cutesy little biology lesson. Not all ants are created equal. Ants are different. There's different species of ants depending on where you're from and where you are. And
sounds yeah. like humans.
Oh my gosh, right? So Hope is definitely more competent than Scott. And this is really obvious. She like has a fight with Hank, and Scott is the one that goes and talks to her, and he convinces her to stay and help because essentially he's like, he doesn't want this because he doesn't trust me. And he's like, no, I'm not here because he doesn't trust you. I'm here because I'm expendable.
Yep.
Because I'm a lot easier to lose than you are. So when she comes back,
well, then, and while still in the car, she teaches him how to talk to the ants.
Scott has some success. He uses the ants to like lift the penny and then twist the penny, and like it was really cute.
Spin that penny.
Yeah. So when they come back, Hank finally tells them about Janet, and the story at this point is very obvious. They were on a mission. Janet shrunk down to the subatomic level and disappeared forever. So that's a bonding moment, and this is the moment where you actually see the beginnings of them, the repairing of the relationship between Hank and Hope.
Too many people with the first name starting with H, damn it.
Okay. So
because this relationship with Hank and Hank needs great repair.
Yep.
You're just looking at me like, shut up, Mike, you're stupid.
Scott, let the record show, not my words, yours. So they need some kind of like device thingy that'll help them in the heist. And this device is at an abandoned old SHIELD storage facility. And you can't see me do air quotes, but hopefully from the tone of my voice, you can hear the air quotes. Obvious, and it's really funny, as he's like dropping down, we see very clearly this giant A on the top of the building. It's like, this is not empty. And Hank's like, okay, abort, abort, abort. Scott's like, nope, I'm going in anyway. So it's the Avengers compound, and Scott goes in, and we see Sam, which we talked a little bit about at the beginning. Poor Sam. This is such a cool fight. A, because we get a little bit more detail into Sam's tech than we saw in Winter Soldier. So it's cool how he can, like, see, because when they're on the roof, Scott comes out, or Scott's shrunk down and Sam comes out. See, now I'm doing it with the Sams and the Scots.
Too many S's, like, damn it. Sam needs to find Sam. Nah.
Falcon. We'll go with Falcon. So Falcon is like, oh, I saw something on the monitors. And meanwhile, Scott's like, oh, he can't see me. And Sam's like, I can see you. Because he's got Falcon vision.
But the great thing is that, like, after Scott gets found out by Sam, and Sam's like, I can see you, Scott unshrinks.
Yep.
And then he pops open the face part of his helmet and goes, hi, I'm Scott. To which Hank and Hope just look at each other and go, did he just say, hi, I'm Scott?
That was Hope. Yep.
I'm like,
and so Scott is so adorable in this moment because he's like, look, I just need this thing to save the world. Like, I'm Ant-Man. And Falcon's like, you're Ant-Man? Okay. And there's this fight, and this is a really, the fight scenes in this movie are so, so amazing and so creative because of the shrinking and the growing and the punching and the twisting and the more shrinking.
Which we see a lot more in
Ant-Man
and the Wasp. Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately they fight. Scott manages to get what he needs, and Sam is basically left bewildered, like, what just happened? And the next thing he says is to some guy at the cons, he goes, Cap cannot find out about this.
And then you're in, like, the dining room of Hank's house.
And Hank is pissed.
Hank is ripping Scott a new one. And then Scott just goes, pulls it out of his pocket, slams it on the table. And then Hope's like, you got it. And then Hank's like, we did a really good job. To which Scott goes, is anyone going to talk about how I fought an Avenger and lived? And then Hank is like, let's not dwell with the past. It's like it was great. But then
Darren shows up.
Darren is magically in the house.
And he notices more than he seems to notice. And like he has this awkward, very cringy conversation of like he just wants Daddy Hank to love him and be proud of him. Cause he's so good.
Notice me, Senpai.
Yeah, pretty much.
We had to have a K-Way moment in there somewhere.
Darren's upset and a whiny baby and leaves, and he calls Hope. And apparently Hope's entire job when it comes to Cross is just to smooth his ego and be like, yes, darling, yes. Hank, you're such a jerk. He's so mean to you. Oh, you poor child. To which a normal parent would have been like, you're grounded. Shut up.
Quit being a little bitch.
There it is. That. But Darren's, he suspects stuff. So he tells Hope over the phone that he's like tripling the security and closing the vents. And they're like, oh God, how are we going to get into the building now? And he says, the water main. And Scott says, we're going to need some more help. So he calls his friends. And Luis is, and they kind of, they freak out about the whole Ant-Man thing. And they're like, oh, this is really cool. But what I love is they're like, oh, we're the, yeah, we broke into your house. He goes, and Hank's just like, yeah, I let you break into my house. I know.
And then one of the other great moments is that, you know, before they really start formulating the plan, Scott shows the guys the suit.
Yep.
And he's like, all right, guys, promise me you won't freak out.
Don't freak out.
And Luis is like, nah, man, nothing freaks me out at all. And then, like, shrinks down.
And then like, they freak out.
And then, like, Luis is freaking out, going like, oh, my God, where'd you go, Scott? And then, like, Scott's just on Luis's shoulder going, hey, Luis. And, like, Luis just, like, screaming like a little girl running out the door and stuff like that. So, like, I think his name is Michael Guzman, who plays Luis. Phenomenal. Like, he, like as adorable as Paul Rudd is, if it wasn't for Michael Guzman, you probably wouldn't have some of the level of comedy that you would have in this film, too. Because he adds a whole, especially in the scenes coming up with what we're about to talk about, he adds a levity to it. Because
he does.
Going into it, you know, Scott is serious, Hope is serious, Hank is serious. But then you got Luis,
you need the levity. That's true. Anyway, so the plan sits in motion. Hope puts Luis as a security guard inside the facility because he has to like do something in the server room, I think.
He has to.
He's the one that has to
relieve the pressure on the water.
Release the pressure on the water main, right? So then Scott basically rides like the crazy ants because they're also electrical. Down through the water up to where they need to be. But Paxton. Oh, Paxton. Because they realize his partner, they realize that, like, hey, the guy that went to, like, see
Scott,
the one who posed as his lawyer was Hank Pym. Like, that's really weird. He broke into Pym's house. Oh, also, it's revealed that Hope is the one that actually called the cops on Scott. I'm sure she regrets that now, but I don't think she does.
At the time, she doesn't regret it.
So the other two guys are like, oh God, the cops, what do we do? Cause they're sitting in the van. And the other guy just like steals the cop car and like rims it into a tree, which was really funny as a distraction.
However, once he gets back to the car,
we hear the very unique
car horn, which tips off the cops. And it's like, oh God. It's like, we've heard this before.
Yep. So Cross basically reveals that he sold the yellow jacket to Hydra. He's like, oh, these are the lovely men from Hydra. And then he goes, oh, it's not what it was. I'm like, clearly you didn't see the mess in the Potomac. I'm just saying.
Well, no. Well, keep in mind, this is taking place after the events of Winter Soldier. This is taking place,
I know,
a few years later. So his
I guess in the meantime Hydra's been rebranding.
Yes.
At least Ant-Man established that if we ever wanted to bring Hydra back as a villain, even though they're kind of overused at this point in a lot of ways, we could do that. And I think that's going to come up in that could potentially come up in Falcon Winter Soldier.
Either that or when
Bucky Cap and Falcon Cap.
Either that or when Ant-Man 3 gets done. Because Ant-Man 3 is still on the docket.
This is true. I kind of would love to see, I don't really want to see Hydra for another Ant-Man film. I would want to see something, you know, from the comics. But we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, but here's the other thing. It's like, we don't know what else is planned in some of these films at the same time. Because, and we'll talk about this later, but earlier this week, Disney made the announcements about films being pushed back to later dates.
Yep.
But we'll talk about that at the end, because obviously that will play an effect on what happens with Phase 3 and Phase 4 and Phase 5, obviously.
Yep. All right, so moving on. Scott goes in and the crazy ants disable everything. The computer thing in the truck, in the van, they help disable the lasers and he drops down. But Cross is insane, not stupid. So he knew about Scott and he had like a backup plan, basically. So Hank finally punches him in the face.
And Darren's like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Like,
well, he was expecting it. He just didn't expect it to hit that hard.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, wow. Like, I knew the punch was coming, but I didn't expect it to have that much oomph to it, you know?
Yeah. So the laser, let's see. Hank tries to reason with him, but it doesn't work. The particles basically altered his brain chemistry, like I said earlier. Scott basically throws one of the discs, and it, like, basically there's an there's like a little pop, and Scott comes out and like fights. And then Hank gets shot. He's fine. He'll live. And Hope gets help from the ants to prevent these guys from killing anybody else. Louise pulls the alarm, which gets everybody in the building. Everybody escapes. Cross gets into the helicopter with the yellow jacket suit in a briefcase. But then as they're about to take off, we see this army of flying ants with Scott riding Antony. And to Cross's benefit, he does the one thing we wish people would always do in a movie. It's like that Indiana Jones moment of like whip, and then he just like takes out the gun and he's exhausted and he shoots him. So he starts shooting at the ants, and unfortunately, we lose Antony. Alas, poor Antony, we knew him well.
We will, when this recording is over, we will ring the 10 bells for Antony.
Although, how many ants did actually die in this movie? Quite a bit, if you think about it. All the ones that Cross shot before he hit Antony, the other ants that got crushed or blown up by the yellow jacket. I feel bad for the ants, but I'm pretty sure no actual ants were harmed in the making of this movie, so.
Yep.
So Scott makes it on to the helicopter anyway, and they fight, there's things, and Scott kind of gets like pulled out of the helicopter. He gets big again so that he can, you know, not fly away and die. Meanwhile, Cross puts on the yellow jacket suit. So Scott makes his way back into the helicopter and it's the yellow jacket. So in this fight sequence, Cross actually ends up killing the pilot, and
well, keep in mind, this fight is actually also happening inside the suitcase.
I was getting to that. Yeah. Inside the
briefcase. Because they don't see where, because like Cross doesn't see where he's shooting. They just, that's right. All he knows is that he's in a briefcase fighting Ant-Man, and you got Siri playing the Muse in the background, which was kind of funny. That's out of nowhere, Siri would just go playing the Muse. But Cross is shooting and inadvertently hits the pilot.
And right, but then there's also, so the helicopter starts to crash and we see the moving parts and everything, and it's so epic how it all looks. So the copter crashes, they end up free falling, and they fall into someone's pool. Yellow Jacket comes out first. He's very scary and like basically attacks these people for no reason. But there's this great moment where like, again, the shrinking and the growing. So Yellow Jacket shrinks, Hank grows, and he gets like tossed. So he grabs a ping pong paddle. I love this. This is like, I think this is my favorite action moment, I think, or one of them. And he just like hits him with the ping pong paddle straight into the bug zapper. And then Paxton shows up and arrests him. Or correction, tasers him when he tries to like reason with him.
Yep.
So Scott wakes up in the cop car. And he's like, no, we have to go back. The there's a very dangerous thing there that I need to take care of. And Paxton's like, you stop right now. Like, meanwhile, they get a thing on the dispatcher from the dispatcher. They're like, oh, there's a number thing happening at this address. And the two cops look at each other like, oh, wait, that's Paxton's like, oh, that's my house. Oh my God, Cassie. But Scott's stuck in the backseat of the car when they pull up and his helmet is off. So he manages to get the helmet on while he's handcuffed in the backseat of the car, and he shrinks down, obviously escaping the handcuffs. So obviously Yellowjacket goes after Cassie. And Cassie is like, she's all visibly scared, but she's not backing down. Like, this kid is a force and I love it. So Scott is there, and he gets in there, and Cassie goes to hide in the closet. And this fight is amazing. There's things growing, they grow and shrink. The items around them are growing and shrinking. At least more ants die.
I also like how, like, they're in the train set, and there's that moment where, like, Cross is on the train looking for Scott, and Scott's running through, like, this part of carpet that's supposed to play as, like I guess the, like, grass or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you just see him running through it, and he's like, ah, I see you. I am going to shoot you now. It's like, it's really cool how they set that whole thing up.
And it's, what's also cool is there's a few moments in the film where they, like, pull back from the shrunken moments to see what this is all happening, like, to like, the normal-sized humans. And it's funny because we can see nothing, and we feel nothing. And it's so funny.
Yeah, and, like, you just see Cassie, like, watching this, and it's like, what's going on there?
So in the process of this, Thomas the Tank Engine. Thank you.
Yep. By the way, the narrator used to be George Carlin for that show.
That's really funny. I love it. Anyway, kid-friendly George Carlin. That's things I never thought I'd
Carlin
say.
Has,
anyway,
Carlin has actually done a lot of kid-friendly stuff. But anyways,
I believe it. It's just still weird to me. But anyway, so Thomas the Toy Tank. The tank engine gets bigger from one of the discs that Hank created for Scott to, like, grow and shrink stuff. And it just, like, breaks through the side of the house. And an ant is also grown. And I just gotta say, they designed the ants to look adorable.
Do you know when the last time we saw ants this adorable? Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Ah, whoa. Oof, there's a blast from the past. I haven't seen that movie since, I don't know, 2002 maybe.
Well, it's on Disney Plus, so you can watch them.
This is true. I'll add it to my list. I'm watching period Korean dramas right now. I like history, sue me. Anyway, so epic fight. We have this cute little ant and that grows, and he just, like, runs out of the house. And Paxton's partner just kind of looks at one of the other cops and goes, "That," and Maggie's, like, freaking out like any mom would be. And Paxton's partner's just like, "That is the ugliest looking dog I have ever seen." Like, it's so cute though.
And this is also a gag that gets played in Ant-Man and the Wasp as well. The thing about the enlarged ant, which is nice that they kept that little continuity going.
So Paxton goes after Cassie. He like tries to threaten Yellowjacket, like, "Hey, LAPD," and it's just like, or San Francisco PD or whatever it is, and it's just like, "Aw, you're so cute.
You're trying."
And honestly, they did a really good job, I think, of showing a good new family dynamic that I'll talk about once we finish this movie, or once we finish the breakdown of the plot. So Scott he realizes that the way that the Yellow Jacket suit is made, it's all very tight and small, so he can't shrink down like normal in order to disrupt it. So he has to go subatomic, which is the one thing. There's two things Hank told him not to do. Do not go subatomic and do not mess with the regulator. What does Scott do? He goes subatomic and he messes with the regulator. So Scott goes to the quantum realm. But eventually he's saved, and we see kind of like this blink and you miss it thing of Janet, just like a little bit. And then you see Cassie calling, "Daddy, Daddy." And Cassie loves her dad. Like, it's so cute. So all's well that ends well. But Scott can't remember anything that happened from the quantum realm. But as Scott leaves and the door closes, Hank goes, "Could it be? Like, is it possible?" It's like, yes, obviously it's possible. Janet's alive. And he opens the door, and there's Scott making out with Hope. And it's just so hilariously, it's like it's Scott, hilariously awkward, but it's not like secondhand embarrassment awkward.
But not only that, but the exchange for this is hilarious. Cause like Scott's like playing it off like, Hope, you got to keep your hands off me and stuff like that. And as he's walking down the steps, Hank is like, Scott, you're so full of shit. And and Scott's just like, yep. It's like just no stop. It's like, yep.
Yep. So basically Paxton kind of covered for Scott, and the next scene we see is actually Scott having dinner with Cassie, Paxton, and Maggie at their house, and Cassie's feeding her little aunt at the not so little aunt under the table. She's like, good boy. Cassie learned how to do a cartwheel, and there's a video, and it's Scott's being a good dad, and they're also proud of Cassie. And then we go to Louise, because what is the one thing we have yet to see in this movie?
No, it would be the second time we see Louise.
No, I know, but there's one thing that we had not seen yet. Oh, yeah,
Stanley's cameo.
The Stanley cameo. And at this point, I'd watched the entire movie, and I'm like, there's like 2 minutes left of the movie. Is there not going to be a Stan Lee cameo? But I was like, well, how can there not be a Stan Lee cameo? And then there's a Stan Lee cameo. So basically, Luis's cousin or friend or something met this girl who is a journalist who met with Sam, who was looking for the specific guy. And the girl was like, oh, we've got a guy that jumps buildings. We have a guy who does this. We have a guy that, you know, crawls on walls, which is the first official MCU mention of anything Spider-Man related.
Yep.
And, but Stan Lee is seen as the bartender in the bar where Luis's friend is having dinner with the journalist, whatever. And then Sam tells the girl that he's like, no, I'm looking for a guy that shrinks. And Scott's like, okay, so what did he say? And Luis just looks at him and he goes, he said yes. And that's it.
And it's like this long story. I love how like when it gets to Stan Lee's thing, like the line is like, she's super fine. And you just see Stan Lee just go like, super fine. Like even though it's not Stan Lee saying it, but he's like having the lip
yeah.
it. Like it's so super funny. And I think one of the other cameos that is kind of outside the realm of a Stan Lee cameo is Deadpool. Remember, he's the
he's the guy. He's like the MC at a strip club or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's one of those things that you don't kind of see Stan Lee doing,
but it's really hilarious.
Hilarious to see it at the same time. You're like, what's this old man doing?
So let's talk really quickly about the after credit scenes. Then we can talk about like the greater themes of this film, because there are so many good themes in this film. Number one, first after credit scene is actually with Hank and Hope. And Hank shows her the suit that he had been making for Janet. And he's like, I thought maybe we could work on it together. And Hope looks at the suit with like hard eyes and says, it's about damn time. So there's your setup for the sequel. And then the next after credit scene is slightly more interesting in my opinion, because we actually see Bucky with his arm trapped in a thing. And we see Steve and Sam. And they're like, oh, should we go to Stark? Like, no, he can't help us, even if he wanted to, and the Accords. And then it says, well, I know a guy.
Yeah.
So this ties in Scott into the next film, which is Captain America Civil War, which is also one of my favorite MCU films. But
not only that, but what it also does is, like, as we talked about at the beginning, this is like a standalone film.
It does.
And this scene right here, even though this is actually a real scene that is in Civil War.
Yep.
Whereas most times when you get these cut scenes, you're actually not getting a scene. You're getting something that feeds into it.
Yep.
This is the first time you actually get an actual scene that actually then puts this movie truly into the MCU.
I mean, it kind of already did that even before the after credit scene. Oh, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's standalone in the MCU, but this is what connects it truthfully to the MCU. Like this and the Luis story at the end, and which, by the way, I made a mistake. It's Michael Pena, not Michael Guzman. Michael Pena plays Luis. Sorry, Michael. We share the same name, so you have to forgive me just on that fact alone. So.
Yep. So there's a lot of really great nods to the comics, like with a lot of the like standalone films. I love that. Cassie, like I said, throughout this whole thing is absolutely amazing. And I actually really love, so first of all, family and fathers and their relationships with their children, or the children's relationship with their father is the overreaching theme because it feeds everything that they're doing. The reason that Hank won't let Hope put on the suit is because he wants to protect her. The reason Scott becomes Ant-Man is to protect Cassie. Hope is resentful of her father. Cassie loves her father. Like, there's a lot of amazing, it's all about family, but it's also about like being comfortable in your own skin. And I think unlike Iron Man and unlike Captain America and Thor and all of the other standalone films we've seen at this point, this is the most grounded film in my opinion. Because we see a lot more real world people, not CEOs, not big people or army people. We see ordinary people or ordinary former, you know, ex-cons. However, well, they're not that ordinary, but anyway, this film is very grounded. And I really, really love that about it. They got so creative with this. I love it. The fight scenes we talked about, how amazing they are, the shrinking and the growing and the size changing of items and everything. It's so creative. Like, I just love watching it. And I said it, I'm going to say it again. The ping pong paddle into the bug zapper. Like, come on. That's just priceless. I would have loved to see what Edgar Wright's vision for the film would have been. But I wish we could have, in a lot of ways, I'm kind of glad that they didn't do the whole, oh, Scott becomes Ant-Man because Cassie's about to die kind of thing. Because there is this trend in superhero realm of comics where female characters, whether they're a love interest or a parent or a parent or a child, tend to get refrigerated for the sake of another character. So I'm really glad they didn't do that.
Which is actually something that is, when they did a Once Upon a Deadpool, which was like the PG-13 version of Deadpool 2, they went completely meta on that fact.
And they went PG-13, not PG, but yes.
No, I said PG-13.
You said PG.
Oh, I said PG-13 version, but anyways. But they made a point to that in Once Upon a Time in Deadpool, where Fred Savage is like, dude, you just like refrigerated Vanessa. You know, and it's like, yeah. And like Deadpool's like, what are you talking about? It's like, you know.
Also, the term women in refrigerators was coined by Gail Simone. I just like to point that out. Who's an amazing writer. If you have not read her stuff, what is wrong with you? But yeah, so this movie is great. I really appreciate the fact that they made Maggie likable. They really did. She sounds like an amazing mom that loves her daughter. And I love the fact that Paxton is a cop, but he's not a jerk. In the comics, her father, her stepdad, his name is Blake, he's kind of a jerk. And he's really resentful of superheroes, which, like, I can understand from a cop's perspective within the comic 616 universe. But oftentimes, there are some moments where he was, like, unfairly antagonistic towards Cassie, especially about Scott. Especially after Scott died. And to me, it was always like, this kid is clearly grieving. You are a parent to this child. Why are you being a jerk right now? So I love Paxton. I think he's a great character. He's played really earnestly. I like the actor that plays him. I think this was the first time I'd seen him in anything.
Yeah, it's Bobby Cannavale. I believe it's his last
name.
Yeah,
he's great. He's a really good actor. I've seen him in a couple of other things since.
Yeah, it's
then.
Bobby Cannavale.
So the cast for this film was really well chosen. I also really appreciate the fact that Michael Douglas did this movie because he has children who I think are like, they're much older than they were at the time. I think they're like 12 and 14 at the time that Michael Douglas was doing this film. And a lot of Michael Douglas's movies, he said, are rated R, so he's glad that they could see him in something that they can watch now as opposed to later. Honestly, I think if they want to see a movie his dad was in, The American President is a fine choice of film. I know other people won't think that, but it's a fine film. Abby Ryder Fortson. I knew her name was Abby. That is Cassie's actress. Very sweet, very nice. Like I said, I wish her a really great career. I think this film was a grounding, solid comedy. And something you and I talked about, I think it was during the Winter Soldier review. We talked about how, first of all, we kind of ripped Martin Scorsese a little bit. But one of the things was that, and this is something I think Feige said, that Marvel films are very versatile, comic book films are versatile, in the sense that the superhero genre isn't just one genre. Winter Soldier is a spy movie. And Ant-Man and Wasp is like a family-friendly heist film, even though the heist takes up like 10 minutes. And one thing we did not talk about was the tank.
Yeah.
We forgot to talk about the tank, which is this little tank keychain that turns out to be not a keychain and is just a shrunken tank, because Hank Pym would be insane enough to just keep a tank like on his keychain.
Well, no. He wouldn't be insane enough. He'd be smart enough.
Tomato, tomato.
There's a difference between going like, you know, if the crap hits the fan, which is the one thing that would actually protect me really well?
A tank.
So
when the Pym tech basically like implodes, and I don't use the term explode. I use the term implode for a very specific reason. Like, you just see the tank. And Paxton's like, he's calling dispatch and he's trying to coordinate. He's like, oh, and there's a tank. I really like Michael Douglas in this film. I like him as an actor in general. I think he's a great actor. I honestly really appreciate the fact that they went with Scott instead of Hank. Partially because Hank's been able to shine in, like, the old Avengers cartoons. Avengers Are Mightiest Heroes, he was also in. I think he was also in that for a bit. I might be wrong about that. But he's also not the most likable character in the comics to base a film out of.
But not only that, but the thing is that as we see with Ant-Man and the Wasp, Hank gets his moment.
He does. I like the idea of Hank as being the man behind the curtain, and he's a genius. I like the fact that you see him as like this kind of broken old man that is just like wants to protect his daughter and wants to do the right thing, and he just doesn't know how to actually like do it correctly, but he's trying his hardest. And that's why the other like big theme of this movie is family. It's about finding your family. It's about being comfortable with your own family. It's about building bridges with your family. And as we will see in Ant-Man and Wasp, Scott does build a really good relationship with Paxton and Maggie. That is, I think, as healthy a relationship as you can have with your ex-wife and her new husband. Like, it just cannot get any more positive than that. And I think that's really important for kids to see that. This movie was just fun. I think that's the other thing. Like, and this is something you mentioned last time, that, like, Age of Ultron ends kind of on a hopeful note, but also kind of depressing, really depressing. Captain America the Winter Soldier was also a very serious film. So we're coming off two very serious films that had their moments, but were by and large more serious. And then you have Ant-Man, which is just like a, you can just, like, watch it and not think too hard and enjoy yourself, and you're just entertained.
And the thing is that this is how they wanted to end Phase 2, because what happens in the first movie of Phase 3? It's a super serious film that's really going to pull at your heartstrings on certain things.
This so is it's true.
So, you need to have that lighthearted movie in between all this stuff that's going to
because the next movie has its moments, but it's just going to make it, it's just depressing and complicated and all right. I have just one question for you that relates to next week.
No.
Yes. Okay. Are you Team Cap or Team Iron Man?
I'm Team whoever wins.
That's not an answer. I need a Team Cap or Team Iron Man answer. You only have the two choices. You have to pick one.
I was honestly, I'm the guy who has two friends who are fighting and go, y'all do your thing. I'm stamping off to the side and y'all do your thing.
Oh my God, you're Switzerland.
I am Switzerland, damn it.
Well,
hey, how many conflicts have I avoided because of that?
I don't know.
What was I talking to you about before?
Oh, that's right.
If people can't see it, but I'm pointing to my brain.
So I will say right now as a setup for next week that I am 100% Team Cap. But we will talk about what that means and what that will look like and why I'm right next week.
Switzerland, yeah. The Swiss can never go wrong.
I think this should be slightly more dramatic accent, just a little bit, or like a French-German accent. Try that. But
shut up, Meg.
No. This is my show. So a couple things.
Who has the power of the record button?
Anyway, so a couple things. Marvel movies have been delayed due to recent events.
You want to do the IMDb thing and then go into the news?
Do it.
All right, so on IMDb for Ant-Man, which was an hour 57 minutes long, was a 7.3 out of 10.
And it has an 83% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yep. Okay, now we can go into the news.
All right, so in Marvel news, everything is delayed, but it's delayed. So basically, Black Widow has taken the Eternal spot. The Eternals has taken, I think, Shang-Chi spot.
Yep.
The Shang-Chi movie, I am actually very, very excited about. First of all, we really, 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 really need more Asian representation in everything.
Donnie Yen. Donnie Yen.
Did you see his tweet on April Fool's Day?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so he was like, he played it off as a joke, like, oh yeah, due to some creative differences, I'm leaving Marvel. And he's like, no, I can't do this. I will play this character until I am dead. And first of all, that gives me great confidence for what they're doing with the character and what the film is going to look like, to the point that, like, I'm not worried about it, and I'm very excited to see it.
Yeah, and Donnie Yen. I'm just going to bring that up. So, like, for those who don't know, I'm a massive Donnie Yen fan, and I get a lot of his films on Blu-ray imported over from China to just watch Donnie Yen movies. That's how big of a fan I am of his. So, like, when he's done Blade 2, Star Wars Rogue One, you know, obviously he's in Mulan, which has been delayed as well.
Although, weirdly enough, it got released in Germany.
That's Germans. But yeah, so I'm a huge fan of Donnie Yen. I've been a fan of him for years. So that's why I get all giddy every time Donnie Yen gets involved with something.
So yeah, everything's kind of delayed slightly to the point where it seems like the Marvel Disney Plus shows will also be delayed slightly. Because what they're trying to do is WandaVision has to lead right into Doctor Strange. So because of that, they kind of have to follow each other. I think it's fine if, like, we watch WandaVision and then we have, like, a movie in between. But I understand what Marvel's trying to do, and so I get it.
But it's easier to put out the Bucky Falcon show.
Yeah.
On time, because there's no... You know, it doesn't affect anything in the cinematic universe right away. Whereas WandaVision,
as far as we know,
but whereas WandaVision does actually have a direct effect to Doctor Strange 2.
I can't wait to see a full length trailer for WandaVision. I've been gushing about it since I saw the trailer at the Super Bowl, and I will keep gushing. I'm so excited. But this is understandable. I do wonder what this will mean for summer blockbuster films.
Well, first off, there's reports about AMC just not being able to come back, period. The AMC theaters.
Whoa.
Because, yeah, the report came out earlier this week that apparently AMC theaters, they may not have enough money to be able to reopen their locations when all this is said and done.
Damn.
Because, like, if it goes another month or two, they might be able to hold on. But if you're going past 2 months and you're going to hit in, like, 3, 4, maybe even 5 more months, AMC is probably going out of business. And there might be a chance that Regal goes out of business as well.
Wow.
So it's like, so this is actually one of those things where it's like Hollywood may have to step up and say, hey, we need to, you know, bail out these two chains to...
Well, you know, we shall see. But
and note I say Hollywood and not the government. Yeah. So it's like Hollywood should be the ones bailing out AMC and Regal on this.
I agree.
You know, Paramount has the money, Disney has the money, you know, Sony has the money. They have the
They all have the money.
They all have the money to do it.
With that, yeah, I think it's fair to just jump into the
social media.
Exactly. So I pitched my blog earlier. Please go there. I inadvertently started some fandom drama for the Young Avengers fandom. Sorry, not sorry.
You're not sorry. It's okay.
I'm not sorry. It's geekgirl101.tumblr.com. And of course, Geeky Captain on Instagram. Latest Instagram story. There was a raccoon found in our chimney and she's fine. She's safe. She's going to be released back into the wild with her beautiful babies, but it's really adorable. There was a raccoon in our fireplace.
Like actually on the bottom portion where you guys put the firewood into up top?
So there's like in between, there's like a little platform thing, I guess. And there's like a little door on the outside that's like you can open to like clean the chimney. And my dad opened it because we kept hearing this noise. And he opens it up and puts a flashlight. And there's these two eyes staring back at him. Dad comes back because we thought it was a squirrel. So dad comes back to the house. He goes, well, I have good news and bad news. And he says, good news, it's not a squirrel. So this is baby birth and season for the raccoon population. Found that out the hard way. But anyway, we called a wildlife animal people. They are taking the mommy. We've named her Zorro. Zorro and the babies are being taken to a rehab facility, and then they will be released back into the wild to be happy and healthy doing their thing and hopefully staying out of our chimney.
They will return. They will
return. With that, Michael, where can people find you on the social medias?
Wow, people actually ask me where they can find me on social media? Wow, what universe
are you in? Well, you're going to say it anyway, so I figured I'd at least ask.
I know. It's actually funny. On an episode of Awesome Mania, Ben was like, you know what, Mike? You always ask me first where people could find me on social media. So I'm going to have it where you go first. And then I'm like, what universe am I in right now? What the heck is going on here? But no.
What universe are we all in now, though?
Yeah. But so on Twitter, you can find me on @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and on txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions, or just go to txhthockey.com. We do have some actual hockey coverage that we're doing now. The National Women's Hockey League has been announcing free agent signings for the next season, whenever that may start. So we're at least keeping tabs with the National Women's Hockey League because at least their stuff is about next season and not about trying to salvage something that is not going to happen. Get over it. The NHL is not coming back because today was supposed, and today is Wednesday, April 8th, and today was supposed to be the first day of the NHL playoffs. So get over it. But yeah, just go to txhthockey.com. You'll see Power Dorks, Nerdy Notions, Awesome Mania, really the main shows that have been taken over the website, and eventually some more Viva La Candace with Candace Keita in the near future, because I've been working on overlays because Candace wants to go video.
And with that, I'd like to thank you to our negative 15 listeners.
No, it's negative 18. It's always by 6. Last time was 12. Negative 12.
I didn't get that memo.
Oh, okay, fine. Anyway. Negative 15. Fine,
negative 18. All right, fine. Anyway, so thank you to our negative 18 listeners that did not listen to this podcast.
And that's just 18 more chairs that are going to be taken out of our panel room whenever we get this to be a panel at a convention.
Hey, I know how to pack a house. Anyway, with that, we encourage you to come back and not listen next week as we delve into the very serious question of why Team Cap is far superior to Team Iron Man.
Go Switzerland, yeah, go!
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.